From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. Coming up this week, for the first time in several years, two buyers will be in the Kotzebue area to purchase fish this summer, but there may be a limit on how much they can take. Also, the National Marine Fisheries Service wants to make sure there's enough of one species of fish for both endangered sea lions and commercial fisheries. They're using underwater cameras to do it. Then and more coming up on this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K through 12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
For the first time in 3 years, Kotzebue commercial fishermen will have two buyers to sell their fish to. According to Jim Menard, the area manager for the Commercial Fisheries Division in Norton Sound and Kotzebue, Copper River Seafoods and Pacific Star will be purchasing fish in Kotzebue. How many fish the buyers will be able to hold remains to be seen.
One of the issues with Kotzebue always is what's called a cargo capacity issue, in that the fish are not cut there. What they do is they fly the fish out. So if we get a big period, they do not have enough cargo space on the airplanes, and that ends up limiting how they're going to fish. So the buyers will tell me that they can't take fish the next day. So we'll pull a period, or they may shorten a period.
To help address the capacity issue, Pacific Star is planning on bringing a processing vessel to Kotzebue in August and can ultimately stay until the season ends at the end of August if they choose. Normally, Menard says the salmon runs in Kotzebue peak in number by mid-August. This is not the same time frame as it is for the Norton Sound salmon runs, and the fish are different too.
Kotzebue chum are more closely related to the Yukon fall chum. They come later in the year and they have this much higher oil content. And so that fishery will peak the first week of August usually, and you have the two major rivers, the Kobuk and the Nyukluk. The Kobuk tends to come in first, and then you have the upper part of the Kobuk coming in when the Noatak starts to come in. The Noatak will come in strong in August. So we'll have much more fish in the first part of August.
In 2014, the last time there were two or more buyers in Kotzebue, there were more than 100 permitted commercial fishermen in the area. Menard says typically all of the permits are not given out at once. Only some people fish with commercial permits for the first couple of periods before the peak of the season in Kotzebue. Right now, the number of issued permits is a little bit higher than last year at this time in the season.
This year, it started out, we're in the high 30s, so we're about a third higher. More fishing this year, which we are attributing to two buyers being there and maybe a little higher price. But there seems to be a little excitement with the fishermen. We'll see how the run plays out. Right now, the catches have been average, but it's just two openings right now. We won't tell till the big part of the run comes in.
According to Menard, the going price for salmon in Kotzebue right now is 38 cents a pound. He expects about 50 or 60 people will have commercial permits later on in the season.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Scientists are using an underwater camera to keep close tabs on Aka mackerel to make sure there's enough for both endangered sea lions and commercial fisheries. KUCB's Barrett Wilbur has more.
Counting Aka mackerel became really important, Suzanne McDermott says, when Steller sea lions were declared endangered in 1997.
We learned that Aka mackerel are their main food item. So that's when we really started looking at that fish with relationship to Steller sea lion.
As a National Marine Fisheries Service biologist, McDermott knows the mammals face competition for their food from commercial fishermen. Last year, Alaska fishermen caught and kept 55,000 metric tons of Aka mackerel and discarded another 532 tons as bycatch. This summer, McDermott and her colleague David Bryan traversed the Aleutian chain to answer a big question. Are there enough fish to support both endangered Steller sea lions and commercial fishermen?
The interest for us is to understand how much aqua macro is available to sea lions and how much aqua macro is available to the fishery to make sure that sea lions get enough prey, especially in areas where they're declining.
But counting the fish is difficult. Traditionally, fish abundance is measured by trawl net, but McDermott says trawl nets are useless in the near shore waters of sea lion rookeries. So the scientists built a camera. It hangs underwater, close to the seafloor, and live streams mackerel footage through armored cables up to their research vessel. Unlike a trawl net, it can navigate around rocks, crags, and coral. Plus, the camera's stereoscopic side-by-side lenses mean that they can measure the length of each fish without catching it. Brian says that's invaluable.
With the length, we can estimate their age. We can also estimate their weight, and that's helpful because we can then estimate biomass, which then kind of ties back into food sources for sea lions.
McDermott has been studying Atka mackerel for 20 years, but says the camera gives her a new perspective.
You start to relate to fish more as beings with a brain, whereas when they come up in a trawl, all you see is that particular fish in a net. You don't understand where it lived and how it moved.
The camera gives them new understanding into fish behavior. For example, McDermott thinks sea lions rely on mackerel because the fish guard their eggs, making them a dependable meal. These insights help the scientists build a more complete understanding of a resource that's key to both sea lions and fishermen. In Unalaska, I'm Barrett Wilbur.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Some fishermen in the Bristol Bay region are already thinking about what they can change before next year. KDLG's Caitlin Tan caught up with drift boat skipper and Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association board member Larry Christensen during a recent stop inshore for a repair to see what's on his mind late in the season.
Docked up at Silver Bay is Larry Christensen and his crew on the Lyra. They're fixing a head gasket, but will be out on the water again soon enough. This record-breaking season has served Christensen well, but he says the limits have been a damper.
I personally have driven through and away more fish than I've ever seen in my life during a legal fishing opener, and that hurts. So there's still things that we need to figure out how we can utilize these fish better.
And when Christensen is not behind the wheel of the Lyra, that's exactly what he's doing on the board of the BBRSDA. He serves on the marketing and finance committees, and for the past 3.5 years, he's helped with this idea of branding Bristol Bay. So rather than retail Alaskan sockeye in the stores, his goal is for a clear distinction of Bristol Bay sockeye salmon.
There's so much of the marketplace that doesn't even know who we are. What I like to say is they don't know that they want our fish yet, because they're going to find them eventually when we get to it, and then we just have to keep that quality up, and we'll have those repeat customers.
And as a fisherman, Christensen says he realizes prices need to go up. But in order to get better prices, quality is a concern too. Christensen is a big advocate for icing and RSWs. He'd like to see 100% of the Bristol Bay fleet chilled, and in 20 years, maybe even 100% with RSWs.
That's part of our job on BBRSDA, is to make sure that everybody understands the importance of genuine quality, not just percepted quality.
With a run like this year, Christensen says it's tricky to chill the fish, even with an RSW. The fish is being transferred so quickly that logistically they can't be chilled until they're on the tender. He says even though on paper the fish aren't chilled, the turnover is so quick they're just as fresh.
You know, it's not always a reality because you can't get these fish cold when you take a big catch on board, you know, like we've experienced where all of a sudden you bring 10,000 pounds of fish on board and they're 50 some degrees and the period's about over and you got to go deliver and it's like you haven't even chilled them down yet. You know, our system won't chill them.
In the heat of the moment, Christensen says it's easy to get caught up in numbers. How many pounds of fish, what the prices are, when the next opener is. He says it's important not to lose sight of the natural phenomenon Bristol Bay provides.
In this healthy environment, we get to harvest roughly 75% of the resource. and that escaping 25% regenerates an entire whole full 100%. There's nothing else on this planet that does that, that regenerates that fast and that healthy and a protein source. So it's a lot more than just making money and catching fish. You know, it's feeding people, taking care of people. One of the most amazing things on this planet.
So for now, Christensen will head back out on the Lyra to finish out the season. When he's done, he'll put his BBRSDA hat back on. His goal for the next season is to have more boats with RSWs and to continue with the overall branding of Bristol Bay sockeye salmon. Reporting in Naknek, I'm Caitlin Tan.
While many Kuskokwim fishermen voiced frustration with only a few gillnet openings this summer, other fishermen used dip nets to keep fishing through the closures. Two dipnetters called into KYUK's weekly fish talk show, hosted by Anna Rose MacArthur, to share tips they've learned this season.
Alan Joseph began dipnetting near Bethel a few years ago. When he started, it wasn't going well.
It was disappointing because I was catching nothing except maybe two whitefish.
Joseph was so discouraged that last year he didn't touch his dipnet. But this summer, he decided to give it another try, so he called up some good friends on the Yukon.
They suggested dip netting along sandbars or shorelines, and that fish like to run next to them.
For years, Yukon fishermen have been restricted to dip nets to conserve king salmon. The salmon can then be released alive and healthy, unlike fish caught in gill nets. Over the years, the Yukon fishermen have become savvy with their nets.
And you know what? I had really good results. I got a lot of salmon.
The key, Joseph says, is fishing when there are lots of fish in the water. Joseph watched the numbers from the Bethel test fishery to know when to go out. When red and chum numbers jumped, so did Joseph.
I think the most I got so far is about 50 salmon in 2 days, keeping only red salmon and letting the chums go.
Throughout the summer, Joseph kept improving, sometimes catching two or three fish at a time, and he developed some savvy tricks of his own.
I use a stick or a screwdriver in the oarlock to support the dip net in the current.
The mouth of his net faces downstream to intercept the fish moving upstream. Fishing, he says, is best during the incoming tide, but works in eddies during the outgoing tide.
And I found it's easier to dip net from a stationary boat. So I just park along the shore or anchor in the water near the bank, about 20, 40 feet from the bank.
It's a little more effort than gill nets, but the quality of the meat is better. Joseph's fish are fresh, feisty, flopping on the boat with no bruises or net marks. And his favorite part about dip nets, he doesn't have to wait for openings. Joseph just waits for the fish. Another dip netter called into the show to share how he'd built his own dip net. It cost him about $50. That's way less than a new dip net from a store, which can run up to hundreds of dollars. The caller used electrical metal tubing for the frame. That's the metal tubing that holds electrical wires in buildings. For the net, he bought a replacement. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KNOM's Davis Javi in Nome, KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, KDLG's Caitlin Tan in Dillingham, and KUCB's Barrett Wilbur in Unalaska. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.